Welcome to TSW Comics,
a monthly look between the covers of Marvel's Star Wars comic book series.
Hey everyone, welcome back to TSW Comics. I'm Mark.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Tim.
And we're back with issue 10. We've got quite a lot to get through tonight, now that we've defeated the Gremlins and they are well and truly buried. Gentlemen, it's been a while. How are you?
Fantastic. It has truly been a while. I think I haven't talked to you guys in well over a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a monthly show.
Yeah, I think we did break out the last one a little early.
Yeah, I think so, because I think we're kind of planning on doing it as a kind of a special edition, talking just through the one-shots, and we end up doing a full episode. And yeah, there's a lot to get through this evening. It's a lot of one-shots, got some Thrawn, got a little bit of Darth Vader. Really looking forward to chatting some Star Wars comics here.
Yeah, me
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
We got a lot to get through, but I want to start off the way we start every episode and ask you guys what your month has been like in Star Wars comics, because I know from chatting beforehand that you guys have been consuming a lot. So, Tim, what have you been reading this month?
It's been another month of getting back to Star Wars comics for me. I ran through the Lando series again in anticipation for the Solo trailer, and what we're going to talk about here in a little bit is that new Lando series was announced. So Lando was kind of the theme of the early part of this month for me, and then I hopped into Thrawn and Vader were my big ones already for the start of this month. This Thrawn book is great. It's an adaptation of the novel by Timothy Zahn, the recanonization of a lot of Thrawn's backstory, and this is just going through and putting print and images to his book, and it's really, really good. If you don't have the time to get into the novelization of it, this is a great start. It's quite thick, it's big. It does carry a $4.99 price tag, but I think for the amount of detail and depth that you get in at least this first book, well worth it. And the other thing I jumped into, and I know we just briefly touched on this before we started the call, was the DJ Most Wanted. Now, this is the one shot coming from Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, the writers of Storms of Crate. And I got to say, these one shots, they're killing me here, guys. They're killing me. I don't know if you guys have gotten into these, but they're just not delivering for me.
Really? This is a bad one, is it?
Yeah, I got 100% agree with Tim. This one here, DJ, again, didn't really tell us anything about the character. And Mark, we've been over this, and Tim as well. We go every episode. I believe you say when they pick up the character and put him right back without moving his story or her story ahead a little bit more, it's almost like a waste.
Yeah.
It's like you don't get any extra meat on the character. And, of course, with DJ having a stutter, I have nothing against that. I have one of my own. And that's why I do a podcasting thing. It helps me get over my personal stammer. But when you're doing a comic and you're printing it and you're being phonetically correct and you're adding the stutter in the word bubbles, like it makes for a real long read. Like it's hard to get through.
Well, yeah. that was one of my biggest complaints was that it's a really long read. It's not visual enough for a comic book. I find there's a ton of exposition in it.
Oh.
He never stops talking in this whole comic book. I just want to read and flip through the pages, consume the art, and get a bit of backstory on the character. And I got almost none of that in this book. You know, we're really looking forward to these one-shots because we thought they're going to bring a little bit more and round out some of the corners that we got in The Last Jedi. And for me, neither of these one-shots that are associated or more closely associated with The Last Jedi really delivered. And DJ was a character in the film that I think we're all kind of left wanting a little more, or maybe some a little less.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see how they could expand on this character and make him maybe not even a bit more likable, but it just help us understand some of his motivations that we don't really get elaborated on within The Last Jedi. And this book is well predicted by Mark exactly what it's going to be about. And I'm not going to spoilers here a bit, but it kind of describes how he gets into jail. But outside of that, outside of really placing your character where you pick him up in The Last Jedi, it really does nothing, even for Canto Bite, an area in the film that some people, again, had issues with. It had the opportunity here to expand a bit on some characters, maybe add in a few nods, or even go into a bit more detail about the man with the lapel. none of that. Like, that's what I was looking for, and it just fell so flat for me. It's making me get to the point here where I'm not really even anticipating these one shots anymore, because the last few have done nothing for me.
Absolutely, 100% agree, Tim. I can't, especially, okay, let's just, if you're reading a comic and your average comic, let's say the last Darth Vader, it's a regular size comic, and let's say if you're really absorbing it and you're really taking in all the art and you're reading the word, you mean you're really taking the whole comic in, and it takes you 10 to 15 minutes to read a comic. This DJ comic will take you 35 to 40 minutes to read. Yep. It's so wordy, and again with the stammers, and it doesn't, I don't mind wordiness. Like, we're going to get to this later, but the new Thrawn that's out is a huge read,
yes,
but well worth it. Done mm-hmm. well. This one, I just, it didn't do anything for me. It didn't even feel like Star Wars when I was reading it. It was just,
oh dear. Oh.
It was just there. Yeah. It was just, but you know, they can't all be home runs, I guess.
No,
I'd say if we're going to give a brief recommendation out of this, I'd say hard pass.
Yes.
Oh, that's hard. That is harsh.
It doesn't bring anything. Mark, if you haven't read it,
I'm not interested.
Save that $3.99 for a Vader comic.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I wasn't a big fan of the character in the movie. I didn't see what they would be able to do to redeem that character for me in any way in the book, and it sounds like they've done precisely what we could have predicted and dropped the ball on it. But that is a shame. It's almost like if they are going to go for the wordier stories, then they'd be better off doing the little short, the Kindle one-shot type things, a bit like Perfect Weapon, Delilah S. Dawson's short book that came out on for The Force Awakens. Do something like that with DJ if you want to be wordy. Maybe it doesn't belong in that visual medium at all.
And you almost nail on the head there, because if you look at those young reader adaptations that they're doing, there's one coming out for Solo, and there's one, you know, I think it was something to do with the Resistance before The Force Awakens. And they're great little reads. There's the Chirrut and Baze one as well. And they expand a bit on the characters. You can kind of buzz through them in a couple hours. That may be more of an appropriate medium for something like this, and maybe put a bit more of a denser story in there for people to chew on instead of trying to jam it into 32, 36 pages. But yeah. I do have to correct. It was actually $4.99.
Right.
Cover price, so it's even more so
Canadian.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, I guess I'll just jump into it. My pull list for Star Wars has been very similar to Tim's. Thrawn, we're gonna get into that later. Yeah, I like that. Of course, the one shot, the DJ, Vader, Poe Dameron, Aphra, there, yeah, we're gonna talk about that a little bit. Doing some pretty neat stuff, and the Forces of Destiny wrapped up. And it finished off with the Rose and Page one. I picked it up. I read it. It's obviously for young readers.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, we do a Star Wars podcast, comics podcast. So I figured, oh, no, I'm going to – it's, and my comic book guy has standing orders. If it says Star Wars on it, you pull it. And it's okay for the age group it's targeted for. But one complaint, they made Leia look like an old hag.
Yeah.
No, and there's nothing. It's very, the art is very, very Disney, and it has, you know, all those rounded edges and everything else, but it made Leia look like, how can I compare it to, like, the fairy godmother in Cinderella? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they leaned on that instead of making her look like a more Cinderella.
Yeah.
So it was, but you know, I mean, if you have younger readers, and they are male or female, they're great books. They're not going to spoil anything for you. They give you a little bit. Actually, this Rose and Page one I just finished gave a little bit more story to those characters and how they were, because we never got to see them as sisters in The Last Jedi. So it was great for what it was. Like I said, it's not for us 30 and 40 year olds, but it's still, for what it is, it was, I really enjoyed it. And what else we got going on? Oh, go ahead,
Mark. I just wanted to quickly ask, you say that's it, that's the series, the Forces of Destiny series wrapped up now. Is that six issues?
Yes. Yeah, five. We had Leia, Rey, Hera, Ahsoka, and Padme, and then Rose and Paige. And right. Again, all of them, art was slightly different. This was, the other ones weren't so Disney stylized, but they were, again, decent reads, neat they're neat to read, and they're great for any, if you have a young reader in the house, you know, 10-year-old girl, perfect. Like, just, they're great stories. Another thing I was getting into, obviously, I keep reading the Star Wars proper, the main run. And just in this last issue, I was noticing they had this little adventure, and Han, I don't want to, well, the slight spoilers, but Han gives a medal, like his medal from the medal ceremony in New Hope. He gives this to somebody that helps him out, and then they fly away, and Leia is looking at him going, oh, you gave her your medal. And he goes, oh, I had a bunch of them made up. I give them to anybody. And he goes, I actually trade, if I need a few credits, I sell one of my replica hero medals from New Hope.
Like, Mark Airy would be pissed. No repro.
Exactly. Like, that's not word for word, but if you go to issue 43 and you look at the last page, the last few panels, you'll see them all joking around. And Han's like, yeah, if I need a couple extra bucks, I sell one of my medals.
That's the hero
Death Star medals. Like, I'd want one.
Yeah. Bootleg Han medals.
Yeah, exactly.
Goodness me.
So that's been entertaining. And yeah, other than that, everything all Star Wars, all good, except for the DJ.
I had to do some rapid catching up for this evening's recording because I have fallen considerably behind in my reading. I'm still one issue of Aphra down. When I picked up Aphra and Vader number 10 earlier, I think last week, I'd picked up Aphra and realised that I'd missed an issue. So I had to go back and get that. And since then, another one's come out. So I'm well and truly behind. I'm a whole issue of Aphra behind. But the problem I've got is that I haven't been enjoying it. The last couple of issues I thought had been really a lot weaker than they had since the droids turned into murder bots. The kind of shine's gone off of it a little bit for me.
You need that contrast with them a little. Yeah.
They've actually put them in a position, again, not to spoil anything, but they've moved into where they're kind of running the show. Yeah. So that's the problem. They were great as, oh, come on, let us kill that guy. No. Now they're the ones in the position of power. So it's the dynamics kind of shifted. And now
very much
whatever made them endearing as the evil R2 and 3PO is what everybody looks at them as. Yeah. Now it's kind of like,
They need to be support characters in this book. She needs to take center stage in this.
Yeah,
I'm exactly. Quite a few issues behind, but I found that in the past that they've had a few short one shots that focused in on them. I don't find myself terribly interested in them as kind of individuals or as a pair going forward in a comic book, but in the background, one liners, this is what they're good at. And this is what they're needed for, is to bring a bit of levity to that. And it's kind of a different dynamic, as you mentioned. It's kind of like the evil C-3PO and R2. It's something we haven't really seen before. That's what they need to be doing with them. If they're starting to take center stage, now I'm a few issues behind. I agree that I'm not totally into that, because I've had an issue with that in the past, is that they are one-liners, right? That's what they need to be. They don't need to be prevalent in a big way throughout an entire issue or two.
Yeah, exactly.
We seen that with, remember, I think I posted on our VIP group and Facebook group where they're skipping down the hallway and they're singing loophole. And yeah. I tagged Corey from A Tumbling Saber to that. And it was just one of those, it was silly and it was one of those things, but it was expected. And Tim, like you said, as a side, like maybe a little humor, maybe a little dark humor, which is all right. And now it's hopefully, like, I have nothing but faith in Aphra run. It was the surprise run. I like, and that's held on this long. If you'd have told me 2 years ago, what are you going to like more, Poe Dameron or Aphra? I would have said, well, Poe Dameron for sure. Mm-hmm. No, wrong. No, it's 100% Aphra. So, I mean, I'll hang on.
Ebbs and, of course. Yeah. I'm not going to bail on the title yet. I think they do move in waves. I was thrilled when I opened Vader number 11 today and it started a new story. I like it when they sort of they wrap up a story, they shut it down, and they start something new. It's like, oh, good, here we go. Let's get into something fresh. So I'm hoping this Aphra thing will wrap up sooner rather than later, and we'll get back to one of her squashbuckling adventures, which we're going to talk about when we get into the news, a cameo coming up very, very soon. So, yeah, you mentioned Thrawn a couple of times. This is another one I haven't even considered getting yet. I haven't read the novelization. Should I get the adaptation, the comic book adaptation of Thrawn?
Definitely. I'm about three quarters of the way through the first Thrawn book, the one that this one's based off of. And I've thoroughly enjoyed that. I'm a big fan of Thrawn from Legends. I like what they've done with him in Rebels. He's one of those legacy characters that I was really excited when they brought him back in season three of Rebels. And I'm happy that they're doing this. Now, I know when they first announced this adaptation, this comic book adaptation of a novel, some people were a bit upset, saying, you know, maybe we should leave these a bit separate. But for me, this is a great avenue for people like ourselves that have a ton of media, Star Wars media, to consume on top of everything else that we do. This is, in a 6-issue miniseries, this could be a really effective way to bring people and have, or allow people to have the ability to consume this story without having to commit to, I think it's about an 18 to 20 hour audiobook, or sitting down and actually reading it, which for me would take actually longer than that. So what they've done here is that they've taken, I think the first probably, well, they've just split into six, obviously, but they've taken the first story and they've brought a lot of visualization to it. And I'm really liking what they're doing here. It's from the audiobook form. It's very well done. The voices are great. You get great pictures in your head because you're familiar with this character. But the artists here and what they're able to extract from the book and put actually into the comic, kind of the important pieces of it, because they're not going to be able to do the whole however many pages is 18 hours worth of reading. But for me, they've done the important pieces here, and I'm really, really enjoying it. So I'd have to say that if you don't have the time or you don't want to commit the time to reading Thrawn, it is a bit of a tragedy to not get to hear the words that Timothy Zahn has put to page. But this is a close second. And again, they're adapting his words, and a lot of the direct quotes are in here. The only thing I'll say, the only thing that's missing slightly, is some of that inner monologue from Thrawn that you do get in the book. You don't get it so much in here. You got that a lot with the original Timothy Zahn run from the Legends universe. You get a little bit of that in Rebels, but you got a lot of it in the book here. You don't quite get that in here, and I don't think that's as a detriment to the comic book. It's just something that is a benefit from actually listening to the audiobook or reading the book itself.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an example of, it's very wordy and it's very long, but this is compared to the DJ one-off, this is where it's done right. You don't mind it because it's giving you such great information and backstory on the character and how he's thinking, and they're giving hints of how his character develops. When you're reading this comic, you can see, even from the original Thrawn trilogy that came out in the early 90s, you could see the connection. You can see the strings are there. Yeah. And even with all the new Thrawn stuff, whether it's in Rebels or the new novels that are out, they're there. The threads are there. So this is, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the rest of this. This is, looks like it's going to be very promising. And it's, again, it's wordy, but wordy done well. I enjoyed it. And
I didn't mind the length of the words. I didn't find it that way. And maybe because I've listened to the majority of the book, it's because I'm trying to contrast it to the discussion we had about the DJ comic book and how exactly, there's so much exposition, so much words, it bothered me. I was just like, all right, let's get to the end of this. I want more of this.
Exactly.
And we're going to get another 5 issues of it. Yep. But I didn't find it that way. And I think the visualization and the way that they're able to kind of split a lot of the dialogue with really good art, and art that, you know, you've tried in your head already as I was reading or listening to it before, forming these characters as you do in your imagination. And they've brought it right to page for me. And so I think it's great connecting both the book and the comic book up. Like I said, I'm really enjoying this thing.
Yep. And again, like I was, that was just the point I was making with the, compared to the DJ, like I said, there's just as many, it takes you just as long to read, but Thrawn's an enjoyable read.
Yep.
Done right. DJ, not so much.
Could have seen that coming. I should have put some money on that. Right. The news, is that everything we've read this month, chaps? Because I'm really poor. I'm so far behind on my reading. I've let the side down. I'll do better for next episode. But if you're ready, we'll move into some news.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good with that? Okay, so we've got a couple of nice little bits of news this week, and I hinted at this just a little while ago. Harrison Dula will appear in Dr. Aphra number 18, due to hit shelves in March on the 28th. The official synopsis suggests that Aphra is being blackmailed by the murder bots we mentioned earlier, 000 and BT. What have you got there, Rob? What are you showing?
Sorry, I was just holding this up to the camera so I show the boys. In Aphra 17, that was the last splash page, and it had Aphra.
She's in it.
And she had Hera in custody. Oh. I'm not going to give anything away because it sets it up. But Hera does show up in Dr. Aphra number 17, and that's in the stores now. There's not a whole lot of Hera in it. It's building up to what
it's
we're
just
about
a
to
tease
talk about.
For the next one.
It's just saying there she is. She's in it.
Yeah, well, the tease in the synopsis says that even though she's being blackmailed by 000 and BT1, it doesn't mean she can't cause trouble and have some fun along the way. Sometimes that fun means infiltrating rebel training grounds, and sometimes that trouble means crossing paths with famed rebel Hera Syndulla herself. Right, help me out. Let's try and pin this down in the timeline. God, I know some people, if it's confusing me, I know some people are going to be confused by this. Where in the timeline, in relation to Rebels, is this story going to be set?
Having not read the last few issues of Aphra, just based on where I think it is, I would say in between A New Hope and Empire still.
Yes.
Right.
I believe, like I said, they're very vague. It's not like they say, like, oh, remember the Battle of Yavin? So, you know what I mean? Like, we don't have these dates that are just hanging out there. No. We know Aphra from when she was with Vader, and then she moved over and got her own, and that was kind of New Hope-ish or just slightly after New Hope.
Yeah, Luke has done his bit by then. He's a player, isn't he? He's on the stage at this point.
Yes.
If they're just going with pure sequential storytelling as the numbers climb up, I would assume that this is all after everything we've read so far.
Yeah.
Which
includes,
for sure, yeah.
Yeah, the build up or her introduction in Vader, which we know happens post A New Hope or the Battle of Yavin. And this continues on with her arc after that. So, yeah, this places her well into before Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
So, yeah. She's going to be present, I think. And I think if you look back at the Forces of Destiny, I think there's one of the episodes, the YouTube episodes, that she actually appears on Endor.
Yes.
So she's going to be strung through canon. I think you mentioned this on the main show a few times, Mark, there. She's definitely being set up for something bigger.
Absolutely. That was the point I wanted to make, is that I'm seeing Hera infiltrate everything Star Wars right now. Everything, and I can't help but think that they've got big plans for her in the Disney arena, in the new streaming service. I think the new show. We've heard rumors of something called Star Wars Resistance, which may or may not be a new animated series based on the trademark that came out last week.
Yep.
I can't help thinking that Hera is going to be at the center of whatever they're going to do on TV. And I'm really excited about it because I love the character, so I'm very keen. She just seems to be popping up everywhere right now.
Yeah, she's definitely prevalent across what would be the entirety of, at least from Rebels forward, all of the Star Wars eras. And I really like this idea. I think you actually pitched it on one of the dailies, is this Star Wars Resistance and this being the birth to the Resistance, and, you know, whether Hera is actually part of that. So does this happen post, I don't know, we're getting a bit beyond Aphra here, but does this happen post Return of the Jedi with Hera and taking her right through into relatively close to the most updated saga?
Yeah.
I think that'd be brilliant. Like, she's an awesome character.
Yeah, it seems quite likely.
While we're still on Dr. Aphra, an issue back, in issue 16, we had the same-sex kiss in Star Wars comic. Which was, and again, it was a full page thing, and I'm not going to give anything away. But anyway, it was just one of those. We're in the fight, they kiss real quick, and then they move on with the story. They didn't make a huge big deal of it, which is great because it's the same thing. It would be the same thing if you're reading and you saw Han and Leia steal a moment with each other and then move on with the story. So it's
brilliant.
I would just be remiss if I didn't mention it. It's cool that here it is. It's there. It is. Didn't make a huge thing out of it. Didn't like pump it up saying, oh, here it comes. Wait for 3 months. This thing's coming up. No. This is a natural thing.
Yep.
It happened. They're moving on. So
Yeah, just throw it away. And I love the interplay between those two characters as well. The Imperial officer, the name of that character is escaping me, but the way she refers to Aphra as something Chevron, it's like this. She's so completely wrong about this girl all the time. I just love, yeah, I love their dynamic. I love that interplay. If you took the droids out or push the droids back in the story a little bit, I would probably be happier with the way these stories are shaping out. But yeah, I agree with you, Rob. The way they just included that element and didn't make a big song and dance over it, because if they did, I think they would cheapen the moment. It's true, yes, to the characters, definitely. And it's nice to see it handled in a relaxed way and not an opportunity to make a statement or rattle a saber.
Exactly.
Definitely. Now, just at risk of sending us down a slight tangent here, I have to ask, just it's centered around Aphra. Did you happen to see the figure?
Yes.
Her figure at New York Toy Fair? They announced the 3¾, or they showed the 3¾ inch for the first time at New York Toy Fair last weekend. That's coming out with the vintage collection this spring. I think she's in the first wave, maybe. I can't remember her number, but it's within the first six or so figures. And yes, I'm super excited. That was a fan choice selection from, I believe, a year or two ago. So super excited to get her in action figure form in the not too distant future.
Yeah, it looks incredible. It's I did a Coffee Morning podcast last week with Mark Airy and Adam Sheldon, and that was one of the things that we were discussing on there, that figure, because Adam wasn't familiar with Aphra, and he sort of described her and said, "Oh, that this character in the red jacket and the flying goggles." I'm just popping an image in, Rob. I don't know if you've seen it. I'm just popping it into the chat.
Yep.
This has been high on my list to purchase since she was selected as the character to be carded as part of the vintage range. So that'll be one that I'll be seeking out. Hopefully it won't be difficult to get. I'm sure that's not a thing. But yeah, she will be mine, and it will take pride of place in the studio here. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, lots of cool stuff came out there, right? At New York.
Yeah. I have my original 12 vintage from New Hope, and I'm not pulling that string. Like, I'm still chewing on my Yoda and Bespin Luke from Empire, and my bookshelf is screaming at me, wondering where Han Hoth is Leia and Lando.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a Lobot. So I can't start pulling that string. That's a hill I can't climb.
You say that now. We'll see about that.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll see at the next celebration.
I've already lost that battle, and I was looking at a rather large collection, put a price in on a rather large collection of vintage today. So we'll see. We'll see where we go. But my shelf is looking very full at the moment, and I've gone straight past that first 12 I spoke about. It's I'm getting there. So, but that's a whole other podcast. All right. Next news item is The Last Jedi comic book adaptation. So Rogue One screenwriter Gary Witter is adapting The Last Jedi for a six issue miniseries, the first of which hit stores on May 2nd. So just ahead of the Blu-ray, because the Blu-ray is next month, isn't it? But just before Solo, Witter will be joined by artist Michael Walsh and Mike Spicer. There's cover art in the show notes as well for this, which I think looks pretty cool. Interested in this, guys? Considering what you've just been saying about Thrawn?
You know, I have yet to jump into either of the adaptations from the films, being Rogue One or The Force Awakens. And I'm going to say I'll probably have to hit this up on trade, I think. Now, Rob, I know you've read these, and I'd be interested to see if it brings a little bit more to the stories, or at least, again, rounds out some of maybe whether it's deleted scenes or scenes that seem shortened within the film itself due to just pure runtime. But for me, these have always been at arm's length. I'm not too sure why. I don't know if it's, you know, six issues of a retelling of a film that, you know, I've seen, I've experienced. And yeah, I just got through kind of praising Thrawn as being an adaptation of a novel. but I just don't feel the same way about these ones. I'm maybe Rob or Mark maybe try to convince me here, but I still haven't quite got there yet with these six issue miniseries comic book adaptations, because by the time you add all that up, you know, you're into another $20-$30 for the comic book adaptations. And I just haven't seen the justification yet, at least, for buying these as opposed to just buying the Blu-ray and watching the film a dozen times.
Well, okay. So I have, since Marvel and Disney, since the Disney purchase and the Marvels started taking over everything after Dark Horse, I pulled every single one, and I got a first run of every Star Wars comic. So that's why I buy the individual issues, and I've bought the Rogue One and the Force Awakens adaptations. And are they worth it? Yes, they're great. They do touch on a little deleted stuff sometimes, or even a scene. The artist will take a panel and take it from a different angle that you're used to seeing on the screen. You mean they might reverse the shot? They might. They take a few liberties that way. So you do get a little bit more information and a lot more visuals, and they're great. But if I wasn't collecting every single issue, literally, and have it first run, I would much prefer to have these in trade and on my bookshelf. I got the original trilogy in trade, hardcover trade, on my bookshelf behind me, and they're fantastic. I would love to have the Rogue One and the Force Awakens and the Last Jedi one coming out on my bookshelf. I still own them, and the only reason why I own them is because I'm a completionist and I have to have them. That's going back to why I don't string on collecting new toys, because I know where it's heading. So are they worth it? Yes, absolutely. Are they worth getting individually? Sure, of course. But they're way sexier on your shelf on a trade.
Yeah, that's the direction I think I'm going to end up going with these. Now that you're saying that, it adds a little bit. I like your point there about it maybe coming from a different angle. Like, even look at this cover art that we're looking at here, is that it looks like it's almost coming from a Porg angle, but that exchange, that first exchange between Rey and Luke. So that is enough for me to jump into a trade, but I'm looking for a $15 trade to jump into these things. Six issues is perfect, fits into a trade. You can pick it up at Chapters, or I could probably pick it up online as well for a reduced cost as opposed to this. But you sold me, Rob. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, even I think, Mark, we discussed this when we were doing this show from Celebration, where they just came out with like a $200 box set of hardcover trades. And they are so, like, I got them, you guys can see them, but I got them all piled up behind me on my bookshelf. And there, I obviously a lot of Star Trek in there too. But I love the way trades look, especially on your shelf. And of course, as anybody that's listening to this, hopefully if you're into comics, you know what it's like when you're digging out those long boxes. It's like, do I need to read this? Do I need to – the same thing when we're doing this show. I keep everything we haven't touched on, anything that comes out in between these episodes, I keep unpacked, and then we discuss it. Now they can – after this recording, they can all go into their long boxes and be put away and taped up, so they're good forever. But you're on your bookshelf, especially with these adaptations. You can just reach behind you, pull it off. Yeah, I'll read The Last Jedi tonight, or I'll – I mean, I'll let my kid read New Hope, or you mean it's, they're great. So, yeah, like I don't want to discourage anybody from buying the single issues, because I still want them to come out. So I don't want the sales to drop. Yeah. But at the same time, if I had my druthers, if I wasn't such a completionist, I'd definitely be going trades.
Yeah, they're very enticing and very appealing as a way to read issues multiple times, These stories in particular may benefit a bit more from that, is a continuous read. Yes. You look at Sons of Dathomir that we had talked about before, and other trades that I've got here that are really more suited to reading 5-6 issues, these arcs that they're writing and how they're constructing them. You can even see that with Invader as well. I wouldn't say buy anything but single issues with Vader, but the arcs that we've read, the 2 5-issue arcs, really serve well as a continuous read.
Yeah,
and you're right. A film in itself may serve that even better.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine picking up the first volume of this new Vader run and reading issues 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you get to 5 and they finish it? Like, maybe how fantastic would that trait? You'd be like, oh my, I gotta start this over again. This is fantastic. Yes.
Yeah, that's see my long box is my iPad, so I can go back and I can pull every issue, not damage them, and reread exactly what I want when I want. But reading week to week, that is the thing, is that sometimes, you know, when we were reading Maul, sometimes you get to an at the end of an issue and think, that's filler. That would be the the few pages that I burn through if I was reading this whole thing in a trade. And sometimes I feel a little bit gypped that I get to the end of that book and I think, well, there wasn't much there. And sometimes you get, what was the episode? Was it episode? Was it issue 5 of Vader with the crystal, the bleeding of the crystal?
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments where I just thought, oh, this is where it pays off. So that thing, you know, at the end of a small, at the end of a trade, that would be the delivery point, wouldn't it, for that entire story, that moment. So yeah, I think if I picked this up, and I did, I just went back and checked. I picked up one issue of Rogue One, and then immediately judged it as not my cup of tea. And so I don't know what this could offer me. If it was an adaptation of the novelization that I know is going to include new material, especially designed for the book, that will be a different thing altogether. If this is a simple adaptation of the movie, I'm not sure it's going to offer me so much, so I might not read this.
Sorry, Mark, but if this run, and I'll let you know right away when the first issue comes out, if it has Han's funeral in the comic, fantastic.
Like, yeah, it's, that's the moment. That's the thing. That's the value. Then if they do something like that with it, then that is the value. And then they'll have my money and my time. Yes. That's good. So we've mentioned it, I think, already this evening, Lando Double or Nothing. This is another... There's a whole bunch of stuff. I think there's about 23 books coming out that are tie-ins to Solo. And they're different. They're young reader comic books. There's novelizations. And there's these little... Is this a one-shot, this Double or Nothing? I'm trying to read through the notes very quickly.
It's 5 issues.
This is a 5-issue run, is it? Okay.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is Lando Double or Nothing. So this is the promotional blurb for it by Rodney Barnes. This Marvel Comics miniseries is written by Rodney Barnes, a veteran scribe from TV's The Boondocks, and will play out over 5 issues. There you go. It's focused on Lando set during the incident right before the movie, Solo Star Wars Story, with backstory about Lando and L3. So that's our first hint at what this droid's going to be referred to as in the movie, L337. The series debuts the Wednesday after the movie opens, since it's a story so closely tied in. Coming out of the film, we think everyone is going to want to read more about Lando. This sounds cool. And this cover art in the show notes.
Awesome.
Am I imagining this, or is that kind of a blend of Donald Glover and Billy Dee? That
definitely
interpretation
is.
Of Lando there looks very much like a blend of the two.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love everything about this book, right from the cover art to what we're going to get in this. Now, at risk of it repeating what we've seen with the other one shots, you know, that's my concern. But playing it over 5 issues, they seemingly have grasped onto this idea that we all pulled out of the trailer, that Glover is likely to steal a lot of scenes and maybe even this film away from the primary cast. You know, he's probably acting in a bit more of a supporting role, at least for a portion of the film. And I think he's going to walk out of this film being like, or we are, we want more of this. And they're anticipating this. And I love that they're giving us this story. They may not have enough time in the film to give us enough of Lando's backstory and also L3's backstory. So this may act as a bit of that prelude that we're going to be wanting coming out of the film itself. And hopefully it brings a little bit of denser storytelling than we've gotten in the past with these built-in, whether they're one-shots or mini-series. So that's fingers crossed on that, but I'm really looking forward to Lando. Everything that we've gotten really from Lando has been great. Now, we're talking about that 5-issue run from Charles Soule. We all love that. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping they're able to replicate that with this mini-series and bring us a little bit more of Lando's backstory that we're going to, like I said, we're all going to be wanting coming out of this film.
I have to agree with you. Also, too, you're mentioning that original 5-issue run that they had. And that was, I think, that was the second little mini run they had after Princess Leia when they first came out. And that I was expecting nothing from that run. Again, the only reason why I bought it was on the pull list. And I noticed even on this cover here with Donald Glover, they got the same font.
Yeah, exactly.
They spell Land using the same font as they did with the original run they did a few years ago. I'm going to hold back my expectations just because I don't know where they're going with this new Lando or a young Lando. Like, everything's different. But I've been burned before, and I was so delightfully surprised by the other Lando run we have. I just hope it does the same for me. If it comes close to that other run, fantastic.
Yeah, I'm with you both. The original Lando miniseries that I picked that up in trade, fantastic. It was a high point. I think, Rob, the only reason I read it was because you recommended that I do so, and I was blown away by it. It's easily a high point so far.
I get a lot of raised eyebrows too when they're like, "Hey, you read Star Wars comics? What should I get into?" I'm like, "Grab the Lando run." Like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Really? And it's like, I'm telling you, like, well, what about Darth Maul? I don't know. Read Lando first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen to this podcast would be my advice.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm often my own worst enemy when it comes to anticipation of these things. But there's something about this character from that trailer and from Donald Glover, how good he's been in everything he's done within the last 5 to 10 years. And coming off the back end of that Lando run, everything just seems to be at a point where this film may recontextualize a lot of Lando and, again, prop him up. So there's probably a lot of people running after those single issues from Charles Soule trying to get more Lando because of what he could potentially do in this film.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right. The character's fantastic. He's charming. He's been played by two charming actors so far. How could this possibly go wrong, he says, famous last words. No, I'm looking forward to it. I think we're all into that one. Maybe that'll be an episode dedicated to that when the full run is available.
Definitely.
Might be an idea. Yeah, okay, we'll do that. We'll pin that in the diary. All right. Star Wars Adventures. This is a free preview. This is part of an ongoing IDW comic book series and the first of a three-part young Han Solo storyline by writer Kevin Scott. It'll be released as part of Free Comic Book Day, and the heroes are targeted by the bounty hunters familiar to fans of The Empire Strikes Back, Zuckuss, and Four Lom. You can have your own arguments about which is which. guys, this adventures thing, this is a young reader book, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
definitely.
Do you have any interest in this? Rob, you'll probably pick this up, won't you?
Yeah, again, just because I'm a completionist. And they're... The Star Wars adventures, they've been entertaining. They're not – I'm a 44-year-old man, so they're not for me, but still, they're neat. Are they absolute have-to-reads? No, of course not. But they're very age-appropriate. If you've got young kids in the house, if you get a 10-year-old that's really into Star Wars, grab – and they want to read along with dad on the couch, grab them this. Like I said, these have been fantastic for that. But they don't really – aside from – we had Hera show up in the Forest of Destinies one, in the first one that came out with Princess Leia, which was kind of cool. So there's a lot of those little tidbits that are sprinkled in, which are great. But yeah, I mean, they are what they are. So if you have young kids, they're fantastic. Grab them. If you want to read them just to be a completionist, then just, you know, grab them off Comixology or go to our website and get them through Talk Star Wars, Amazon, and read them that way.
Yeah, I'll definitely be picking up this one at Free Comic Book Day, which I think it's always the first Saturday in May. And what I've been doing with some of these is that I've been grabbing them for my daughter eventually, just to have for something to read later on. Because I threw up an article actually on StarWarsCommonwealth.com about my daughter finding her Star Wars, and that was through Hera. And it's these type of books that I'm hoping to introduce her to, you know, within the next 5 years or so when she gets a bit older, to say, look, here is an avenue in that's directed at you. This is for you. The art is very much so in that world, the writing and all that. So it's an extra way or another avenue into Star Wars for a younger audience. And I really can appreciate that. So do I read these? No. Do I appreciate them? Oh yeah. I think these are really important to have this style and this avenue into Star Wars. So you get that generational experience that I myself am looking for with my daughter.
Again, Tim, I gotta agree with you. I have a Charlie, my baby girl is 13 months, and I'm staring at 7 Forces of Destiny's figures still in the box because I know she's gonna want them later. But again, I know they're new and are new Star Wars, but they're not for me. They're a gift. So so that's the loophole I created.
Yeah, I saw you at Celebration. You couldn't wait to get your hands on that, Chewie.
Also, too, I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on the Free Comic Book Day. Tim, they're usually the first Saturday in May, and that unfortunately falls on May the 5th. It would have been perfect if it fell on the 4th. Oh,
wouldn't it just?
It has fallen on the 4th in the past.
Of course, yeah. It eventually, every 7 years, it would.
Yeah.
Are these weekly? These books, are they weekly? Or is this a monthly thing?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. Given the frequency that there's 10, 11 issues by the time we get to May, they seem like maybe more monthly than weekly.
Yeah,
That's just a guess.
The adventure ones that are coming out have been sporadic. The Force of Destiny that came out, they were like 5 in a row. They came out boom, 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 1 week after the other.
Yeah, and that was a slated miniseries too as well, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm wondering, looking at these, if they're designed to land weekly and wrap up by the time Solo hits theaters, because that would be about
it looks that way
with the Free Comic Book Day edition. And
maybe, yeah.
But we got little brief synopsis for issues 10 and 11, which they follow Free Comic Book Day, so that's why I'm thinking weekly. And they say, so Han and Chewie are being chased by the bounty hunters that go to a planet they don't know. Once they're there in the atmosphere, everything shuts down and the Falcon crashes into the water. We're seeing the Falcon there without the thing between the front mandibles, and this is young Han and Chewie, so it might be a little hint of what happens in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And issue 11, everything on the planet is powered down, so no technology works. Then they figure out a way to turn it on and realize that was the worst mistake they could have made. The planet comes alive and attacks them. See, that's what I feel like sometimes with Skype. When I update it, I feel like the planet I'm being attacked by a planet. Yeah, these sound kind of cool, and they look really cute. The covers look fantastic, but it's clear to me who they're being aimed at, and you guys nailed it with what you were saying. They are for the young reader, but that doesn't mean that we can't take a little something from it, even if it's a hint at what might be happening in this movie come the end of May.
Yeah, they must be set after Solo.
Absolutely.
Star Wars Story.
Yeah. Absolutely, I think so.
It's interesting they're coming up before. Huh.
Yeah.
Are they considered canon, Rob?
Soft canon, I believe.
Soft canon? Okay. I think we talked about this before. Yeah, I think it's an appropriate form for soft canon.
Exactly. And also, just to touch on, I just finished I'm just about to finish, what was that, the From a Certain Point of View, where they had multiple authors write all these little mini stories that came out. And they're great, but you'll hear, I know in one story they're talking about, oh, here's the Battle of Yavin. Oh, we don't have enough pilots for all the ships. And then the story before that said, we only have so many ships, so some of you pilots are going to have to stay back. So it immediately contradicts itself in its own novel because there's two separate authors. So take it for what it is. It's neat. It's cool. Again, I think these adventures are same thing, soft canon, but they can use it later if they have to.
Yeah, I think the rule is that the canon, as long as they don't contradict anything that's happened on screen, but if something happens on screen that contradicts the book, they're fine with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's you know, I'm happy with that. If that's what the story group have to do just to get through the mess they've made, that's fine. I'll give them a free pass. Right, are we ready to move into our main feature then? Because we've got a couple of issues of Vader to talk about. I think what I might do is just throw to a quick break, because we're 49 minutes into the call. Throw to a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to discuss issues 10 and 11 of Darth Vader. If you'd like to support what we do here at Talk Star Wars, then head to patreon.com/talkstarwars and become a patron. Your support will help us as we expand our programming to include further shows, and in return, you'll get access to an exclusive VIP Facebook group, a monthly prize draw, weekly Facebook live sessions, priority release podcasts, an exclusive daily podcast, and a whole lot more.
Head to patreon.com/talkstarwars today and become a TSW patron.
And we're back. All right, you heard our Patreon spot there, hopefully, if I've edited it correctly. Otherwise, it was just a huge gap. Right, we've got two issues of Vader to talk about this month because I've fallen behind a little bit. And last month, we did Storms of Krayt, so we're off our schedule a little bit. So this is exciting for me because we've got to the end of one run in Vader and we've started a new one. Which is kind of cool. I always like that. It's very exciting. So issues 10 and 11, I read these digitally on the iPad. You chaps read them physically, of course, because you're purists.
Yep.
Fools. And let me just do the story recap and then we can get into a nice breakdown, a little bit of a review. So this is the story recap for issue 10 as I saw it, so it's probably wrong. The final part of the Dying Light arc. And Vader faces off against Jocasta Nu in the Jedi Temple. Nu reveals that she has learned that Vader is actually Anakin. And there's this great exchange between Jocasta Nu and Vader. I've put the panel into the show notes because this is just one of those moments for me that spelt out so much about this issue. I'm gonna read a comic page on an audio podcast. For the win.
It's really funny because I have this exact page open.
Do you?
not because you have it, because I want to talk
about
it.
Because that's one of those things. So in the panel, we see Jocasta Nu assaulting Vader with that huge sort of blaster that she put a lightsaber in the previous issue. She says, "I know who you are. The Vault Guardian identified you. Anakin Skywalker. I see it all now. The things unsaid in Master Obi-Wan's final message to the survivors of the Emperor's Purge. Palpatine was the Sith Lord we could not find. You, the great hope." That just broke my heart. "You, the great hope for the Force, were his target. He took you. He made you his. He twisted you into this new form, submerged you in the dark side." All the while, she's opening fire on Vader, right? "You are his tool. You're a little better than a droid, set to stamp out the light side of the Force. But this is impossible. The Force is eternal. It cannot be ended. It cannot be stopped. Not so long as life exists. It will find its vessel. It always does. It already has. You know this. There are others waiting out in the galaxy." And we know two of those. That is some powerful stuff right there. So just to finish up my little wrap-up of the story for issue 10. When confronted by the clone troopers trying to make her escape, Nu attempts to jump to her death with the "I am one with the Force and the Force is with me" line that we've been familiar with since Rogue One. Vader stops her using the Force, and Jocasta Nu reveals Vader's true identity to clones, forcing Vader to kill them all. And Nu has to be and then Nu taunts Vader about his relationship with Palpatine, saying that Palpatine wants a list of Force-sensitive children to make more characters like Vader. So Vader kills Jocasta Nu and destroys the list before reporting back to the Emperor that he has nothing of value following the confrontation. Incredible issue. What a way to wrap up a storyline. Gentlemen, take it away.
Charles Soule continues to nail these fifth issues in the short arcs that he's doing. If you had told me 5 issues ago that we were going to write or going to read an issue focused in around Jocasta Nu and Vader, and it was going to have major implications and impact on both of these characters, I would have said, yeah, Charles Soule could probably do that, but at the end of the day, we'll see. Did he ever deliver? Like, it's another one of these issues. Like, issue 5 is still going to stand on that pedestal, but this gets awfully close with wrapping up another arc within this Vader run. It's a fantastic book, not only from the angle of Vader, but also what it does for Jocasta Nu and the threads that it ties to, I believe, The Last Jedi and also Rogue One.
Yeah, you could have this run of Darth Vader. If you had 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you could have that. You could have sold it as a Jocasta Nu on just a series, like a little mini series. You wouldn't have sold any, because nobody would. I'm being the completionist. I would probably be the only one buying it, and then I'd be running around trying to convince everybody you have to get this Jocasta new run, and everybody be saying, "Okay, no, you're an idiot. You've lost it. Forget it. Like you just you wouldn't be able to convince anybody."
I can see it now, Rob. Jocasta who?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But when you put her in I understand that because there's no way you'd be able to sell it. So now when you've put her in this new Vader run, like and how do you top the first five issues of this new Vader run? You can't. But wow, this gave us it didn't top it, but it came close. Like if the first five are a 10, the next five are you mean a 9 or a high 8, like. But it gave you so much more. And again, it's just like we say this every single time we come to record. It didn't take these characters and put them back and leave them exactly where they were. We got so much more. Even with we got even more on Anakin and / Vader that we didn't have before. And now, and especially Jocasta New, like who would have thought? Like it was just, it was entertaining. It was completely unexpected, and the way they hooked you in by seeing Jocasta New sitting in her little cave, and on the last blast page, I think that was in issue 5, and they're like, "Oh, what's this all about?" Mm-hmm. And then how they compared and contrast with using the library, how they had the Inquisitors and Vader in the library itself, and now you have the actual librarian. It was just really well done. Like there was so much, even if you're not a Star Wars fan, there was so much in the story, and it was really impressive.
Yeah,
so right. it was great.
The other thing it does as well is it's starting to reframe Vader's relationship with Palpatine. At least for me, I started to realize, and this continues right through into issue 11 as well, where I'm starting to wonder if I've misjudged their relationship from the OT era, and I don't know. It's yet to sort of play out in full, but I wonder if their relationship was ever truly functional, even in the most minute way. It seems to be very much in ruins, even from this early on. So that's kind of interesting to me. And I just need to say before I forget. Do you remember when I was saying, I hope Jocasta Nu is in this series because she's bringing the books that will end up in The Last Jedi? Mm-hmm. This makes all of that seem stupid because that's about plot. That was an idea that I had. Oh, the story group need to do this because it's about the plot. And this, what Charles Saul has done, is about character. And this is about the character of Anakin and how he's hiding inside this monster of his own making. So I will... tip my hat to the story group and to the writers here for not worrying about the plot elements and setting up something else. They instead doubled down and invested in these characters and told these wonderful character stories. So double thumbs up to you, gentlemen.
Definitely. And you know, that whole discussion we had about how is this book going to build into The Last Jedi. I love the idea that you had there, Mark, about, you know, whether it's the books or something different. I feel like they accomplished that in just a different way here. You know, when we're talking about this splash page that you read out here about the Force being eternal, it will find a vessel, it always does. To me, this screams what Rian Johnson was talking about in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
You talk about how when Luke's sitting there and discussing about the Force and Rey's optimism towards it, and even with Broom Boy, like there's a lot of similarities I'm seeing in this book and relationships to the overall theme that we're getting, at least with Luke at the start of A New Hope, with Rey during The Force Awakens, and with potentially Broom Boy in The Last Jedi, that the Force in itself is eternal. It will never end. You get that Rey at the end of The Last Jedi with Luke when he's fighting Kylo. There's a lot of these elements in here I'm thinking, wow, like they've tied this together. And when we get to the last splash page in this book, to me, again, it nods towards that bigger universe, that Last Jedi era of things with Luke appearing at the end of this book. So to me, it seeds a lot and it ties a lot better than I thought it was going to once we got into issues 5, 6, and 7. We had high hopes for it building into The Last Jedi in a really meaningful way. But I think, Mark, your point is taken perfectly here, that they've been able to do, at least for me, both. develop these characters, but also tie into this much bigger plot, this much bigger arc that we're seeing within Star Wars right now about the Force.
Yep. The one thing that Luke didn't get, because that last page with Luke coming back, I'm assuming that this is New Hope era Luke, or maybe Empire era Luke, judging by the look of the character in this page. It's difficult to sort of nail it. Is it post-Jedi, do you think?
I had a hard time pegging this, and I went back and looked at this again and again. I'm trying to judge by his face, and I'm thinking it's a little older than we've seen in the films, not including The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. I think this is post Return of the Jedi. That's how I'm reading this.
I was looking for a beard.
There's the obvious time jump, obviously, because they had if in this Vader run, Luke is literally just a baby still. Mm-hmm. That's not to confuse anybody.
The text associated with Luke there, the Jedi will rise again. I'm not sure if that's saying, here he is, he's risen, or that they're trying to point at something that they're going to tie into eventually in the main Star Wars run. I am really hoping it's post Return of the Jedi. I may be reading into it too much because I want to see the deeper ties to this new saga, the new era of Star Wars.
Okay.
But I'm hoping it's there. That's more hope than actually based in fact, but
let me throw something out there then, because this will build on your point, and it also ties into the next image in the show notes quite nicely as well. And this is Jocasta Nu's list. Now, she returned to the Jedi Temple to secure a list of Force-sensitive children, I'm guessing, younglings, people they know of who are Force-sensitive. And we speculated previously that it might have been children that didn't make the cut for the Jedi, and they kind of become the alternates, I suppose, in a way. But this is probably more straightforward than that. So we've got a list of, we've got a list out there of names that would be of value to the Emperor. Now, my question to you guys is: is this list present in Jocasta Nu's library on this planet that Luke finds? Are these the seeds for Luke's Jedi Academy? She didn't go to the Jedi Temple to get that list to archive it. She went to get it to keep it from the Emperor, right? She already had it.
Yes. So the way I read it is that it is likely or could be in the library that she created, but timeline-wise, all these children, let's say they're identified around 8 or something like that, they're going to be well into their 40s.
Yeah,
they'll be way, even get to A New Hope, right?
Yeah, they'd be way older than Luke.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
Yeah. So they're not really the seeds of a new... the Jedi probably, my guess is they're probably extinct by the time, or at least these characters are dead by the time we get to A New Hope. And maybe this ties into something bigger within the Star Wars run as far as him seeking out maybe some of these characters. But the way I read it is that it's less about a list for Luke post Return of the Jedi and more for the remaining Jedi, or at least maybe this purge that we're going to see with the Inquisitors in the following arc. And how these children relate to kind of the extinction, or at least the extermination of the Jedi Order itself. That's kind of how I read it.
Cool.
I was just going to say also too, with the Force ability is very hereditary too. So that might have a play. I mean, if you have all these Force, exactly. Mm. So there's lots of loose ends, but the one thing I like about these arcs is, and especially with Star Wars always ends an arc or a movie or a book with the light side doesn't always win, but there's always hope. Mm-hmm. And that's a Star Wars theme. And you hear that they even ended it with Rogue One with Leia going hope.
Yes.
And that's what I liked about how this one tied up.
Yep.
Yeah. Just to your point there, Rob, about, the Force and Jedi with, I can't remember exactly, it was being hereditary. To me, this book and what they're doing within The Last Jedi moves away from that.
Oh, for sure. The Last Jedi, absolutely. What I got from The Last Jedi is if one rises, if the dark side rises, the light will create something to compensate. Mm-hmm. You mean? And that's, I've made this point, I think, on roundtables or on Talk Star Wars or wherever, where I've said, I think how to end the Skywalker saga is for Rey and Kylo to come to a realization. We both have to exist. We don't have to talk to each other, but we can be separate entities. But if they one destroys the other, you're just going to end up with this repeating circle. Mm. But that's how the Force works. But also, too, like I said, if Luke finds a book about all these people that are Force sensitive, it's just there's an extra string there where I wouldn't see it in a movie, but probably maybe in another comic or another book where Luke finds these people or children of people, or maybe still trying to seek out more Force knowledge from these kids because they will be older than them and maybe they've found a way, you know. So,
yeah, there's got to be something there of interest to Luke, even if it's just making sure that these guys haven't been swallowed by the dark side.
Yeah.
Should we go through this list of names?
Sure.
So Vader accesses Jocasta Nu's list before he destroys it to keep it from the Emperor, so we know that he's got the information. And we get a bunch of names up on screen, which I've ran through my little Aurabesh to English translator. So we've got Darian Witt from Alderaan. Guess that guy gets taken care of in the not-too-distant future. Scape Loig from Cathar. Devin Vitor from Bespin. Interesting. Alaysia Tavir from Kessel. Chris Iliup from Edu. Anali Bissar from Corellia. Nick Lowe from Mustafar. That's interesting. And Jacques Bort from Dakar. So there's a couple of familiar planet names.
Han Solo? I'm joking. Yeah.
Spoilers.
There's your Force tie. Yeah. No, sorry, a lot of familiar planets.
Yeah, lots of familiar planets in there, right? Bespin was an interesting one.
Yeah, Edu as well.
Mm. Yeah, this is some of those ones. When I was translating this morning, I was thinking, oh, there's the narrative alibi. That's Edu, and they're throwing Edu and Dakar in there. They're not traditional thing, but it's all in one big mixing pot now, and it's a nice fun.
Yeah,
I'll give them a free pass. This story, this issue was a fantastic wrap up to this Dying Light series. I really did enjoy it a great deal. And yeah, the last page with Luke turning up, what an unexpected surprise that was.
Yeah, that was a head turner. I was what?
Yeah.
Two things I just want to quickly touch on here. Jocasta wanting to commit suicide. How did you guys feel about that? About a Jedi going that direction? Was that something that? Because when I read it, I was like, that doesn't feel like something a Jedi would do. Now I know she's trying to protect something bigger than her.
Yeah.
But it just felt like one step further than I thought a Jedi would go.
Yeah, it's a little bit more direct than the path Obi-Wan chooses in A New Hope, isn't it? Because that's kind of, he just decides not to fight. But yeah, it is a bit of an odd one. I suppose we have seen, you know, even Chirrut, she uses Chirrut's words.
Yeah.
Even he enters into a situation he knows he's not going to get out of. This is a little bit more overt.
I think maybe it shows she has a knowledge of how, you know, in Force Awakens, how Kylo Ren takes stuff out of your mind.
Oh,
as much as like we do with Poe. Maybe she has a knowledge of that ability being available, and she's thinking, I'm just going to follow my sword because maybe if somebody as powerful as the Emperor could do that, you know. So
yeah,
that's just a
guess. She would rather go to the grave and leave the location of her new library secret.
That's right.
Then have it obtained by Vader or Palpatine.
Yeah. And then I guess the other thing is, and you had already brought this up, Mark, is the recontextualization of Palpatine's and Vader's relationship. I just wanted to kind of comment on that because I think it's a brilliant observation. Because for me, when I'm reading these things, it's reforming everything for me about these two characters. When I see or when I watch the original trilogy, I assume that Vader is this very obedient, I don't want to say lapdog, but he definitely has, or at least projects, a great amount of respect. And sometimes I get a slight amount of fear out of him. But in these, it looks like they're both serving themselves. There's no Vader serving the Emperor. So I'm wondering if at some point when this arc eventually closes out, if we're going to see some of that as to why Vader now, you know, gives himself a bit more towards the Emperor and isn't as rebellious as we've seen him in here, because you look at this list, you know, he essentially keeps it for himself.
Yeah.
And he, to me, he's looking to do the same thing that Palpatine's doing, is let me find someone else.
Yep.
And secret I will apprentice. Rise up and exactly, I will rise up and destroy the Emperor and it will all be mine. And the Emperor is trying to do the same thing. We get a lot of that in issue number 11 as well. And I love that dynamic that they're seeding in here and bringing this whole new aspect to this relationship. It makes it a much more dynamic relationship than I had previously appreciated in the past.
Yeah, already fractured. Because to me, watching The Empire Strikes Back and seeing Vader make that decision, I'm gonna flip my son. I've always seen that scene as Vader being like a junkie trying to get the son hooked on the same poison. And it's like, yeah. Well, if I can just get him over here, then I'll be strong enough to overthrow this guy. It always felt to me like he was under Palpatine's thumb, and Luke represented salvation. That yes. He could not that he could return to the light, but that he could at least deliver on his initial promise to Padme, which is remove the Emperor and make the Empire his thing, and instill his own form of justice to the galaxy. But now it seems like that's not the case. Vader's a much stronger character, using his relationship with the Emperor for his own needs, but it's a constant fight to remain in that position. He's constantly fighting the Inquisitorius, or he's constantly fighting these new pretenders that might come on to the stage. You know, who knows whether Prince Shizor might make an appearance at some point in this from Black Sun, who's also whispering in the Emperor's ear. So Vader's always got to fight every newcomer to try and retain that position, that tenuous position of power. And it looked like it's always been that way. And so it makes the decision to flip over, betray the Emperor and bring Luke over to his cause, it makes that much more natural, much more organic to me.
And that's how the OT sells it, because Vader wears the mask. We can't see him biting his lip through all those three movies.
Yeah.
Where he wants to say something or do something. So, you know, maybe it's just, you know, he's got that mask covered himself. So
exactly.
Anyway.
Okay, right. So let's move on to issue 11 then. This is The Rule of Five, Part 1. Tantalizing title. I'm not quite sure where we're going to go with that. So this is the a brief breakdown of this story. So needless to say, if you haven't read issue 11, you might want to jump out here because there'll be spoilers ahead. So Vader and the Ninth Sister are on the hunt for Jedi and follow a report that there's a Jedi seen in a bar on Coruscant. Vader enters alone, only to find that it's a trap, and some bounty hunters are lying in wait. During the struggle, Vader loses Kerrigan Fallah's lightsaber hilt, although he manages to retain the kyber crystal itself, and the bounty hunters escape. Just after the bounty hunters escape, Vader challenges the Ninth Sister before giving chase. And when he captures the bounty hunters, which look like a family, a mother and father and daughter, he learns that they were in fact hired by the Emperor. Gentlemen, your thoughts on the first issue in this new run?
You know, when we came out of issue number 5, we said, all right, we're never going to get to this height again. And you were inevitably going to feel a bit of a slight letdown walking into issue number 6. And I was curious if I was going to feel the same way coming out of issue number 10 into issue number 11. And being that we're starting a new arc here, you can expect the pace to slow down a little bit. But what they do in here, if they slow down, they don't slow down very much, because this is another brilliant book. I thoroughly enjoyed issue number 11 here, because not only does it take cues from the previous 10 issues, but it also starts us down a new path for another story that we've been anticipating, and it's in relation to the kyber crystal and how he eventually gets his own lightsaber hilt. The art is on point again. The new characters that they introduce here are, again, great, and it feels and it continues to feel like a Star Wars story. Some of the issues I've had with some of the one-shots and some of the other stories that are being told within the comics is sometimes they don't feel like my Star Wars. This book, again and again, each 11 issues feels like my Star Wars while telling new, different, and very dynamic stories. I'm loving this issue.
I really like this issue, true. And Tim, I know you're not familiar with this, especially with Marvel books. You're not expecting to see great starting out points or jumping off points. I know, you know, mate, so this is more of a DC thing. But when, again, why would you skip the first 10 issues of this Vader run? Don't. Absolutely do not.
No.
But if you went to the store this week and picked up 11, you can start and enjoy the story. Now, that's, like I said, that's usually not a Marvel thing, but, you know, hey, here it is. So, other things, too, like how Vader, how he seems, he's still very vulnerable, still dealing with, they don't say it or show it, per se, but you can tell he's not the Vader from the end of Rogue One yet. It's just not quite there yet, how he loses his hilt, gets his... lightsaber hilt gets destroyed. He has a presence of mind to keep the crystal because, wow, he ever worked for that. There was a whole that's the first 5 issues. And then you see him with the Inquisitor's lightsaber with the little rounded with the circle around the hilt, which was neat. I always love the visuals, especially with the dark side. There's something about the Crimson Blade and the dark characters, how they just jump off the page.
It's iconic.
So yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised with where this is going. It's hard to compare it, especially just from where we came from with that whole Jocasta New arc being wrapped up. But now, yeah, it's like, it's not such a letdown where you're like, oh, I can drop off now. No, this will keep you hooked. This will keep you reading and have you looking forward to issue 12. And I think that's the biggest challenge they have, especially after issue 5. It's like, wow, now what are we going to do? How are we going to keep them coming? And again, after issue 10, it's like, oh, they did it again. So I think we have a lot of faith in this run. And this is I'm really looking forward to issue 12.
Yes, I am too. There's the splash page, the cover art, presumably, for the next issue at the end of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of teases something that I've been looking forward to. The first thing that struck me, I need to do a retraction before I go any further. I said this was a bar on Coruscant, and I was mistaken. It's on Kyberia. That was an oversight in my point when I was writing the notes, so my apologies. The first page, when I opened this book and I saw this art, I thought, yes, that's exactly what I want. There's no change to the artist lineup in this book. I don't believe, anyway. I think they're exactly the same. At least pencils are exactly the same, and I think inks are exactly the same. Maybe the colorist is different.
Yep, they are.
But this first page, just stunning. I love everything about it. And this Inquisitor is the ninth sister. That kind of took me back a little bit.
I agree.
When we first saw that character, I initially thought, for whatever reason, male alien, but there you go.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a surprise, but... Yeah, the whole thing, losing Kirik and Falar's hilt was a big one. But, you know, first thing that stood out to me, and this is my biggest takeaway from this book, goes back to something we were talking about with issue 10, is the relationship between Vader and the Emperor. And learning that the Emperor has hired these bounty hunters could be a test, could be his test in Vader, could be an attempt to get rid of Vader. Because he knows, you know, if this relationship is really quite wonky, he knows he's a threat. What's your read on that, guys? Where do you think what do you think we're seeing here with this attempt on Vader's life?
I continue to think this is Palpatine testing Vader. I'm assuming we're going to get to a point at which, I'm not going to say they're kind of come to blows, but that there's going to be some revelation that they're both working against each other. Vader, I think, is very much in tune with this. And I think we're meant to believe that the Emperor doesn't know what Vader's doing in the background, but I have just this sneaking suspicion that he does. So I want to say that this is a continued development or a continued relationship progression within these two characters from writer Charles Soule to show that and develop this mistrust between the two of them.
Yeah.
To eventually coming to a much bigger arc where we're going to see them, like I said, I don't know about come to blows, but there's going to be some sort of confrontation. And I'm hoping that's where we see at least Vader mold a bit more into the Vader we're seeing in the original trilogy that we're more familiar with. And that's the thing I love about Charles Soule in here, is to me he's telling three different stories within a single comic book. It's this relationship with Vader and Emperor and the Emperor. It's Vader himself developing, but he's also taking on this Inquisitor stuff that I still find quite interesting, and we're going to see a little bit more of as we go into the future. So it's very well crafted, this story, on telling multiple continued storylines and threads that have been pulled almost through the entirety of this. Because what it does simply in here, it's not so much a throwaway, but it gets us down the path of his Kyber coming out of the lightsaber hilt almost as all this other story development is happening. And it's kind of a brief nod as to what's coming later. It hooks you in while telling a much grander story. But yeah, that's kind of my take on what we're going to see with Vader and the Emperor there.
Well, I think with Vader right now, as in the timeline, he's not really needed. Like, it's not like where he's like, oh my, wow, we found another Skywalker. We found Anakin's son. We need Vader in the story now. So for the Emperor, he doesn't need Vader running off doing stuff for him. And there's two things. As long as Vader's always looking down or looking behind his back, he's not looking forward to dethrone the Emperor.
Yeah.
So there's that. And also, too, he could be like, he's training him. If he always has, with bounty hunters, they're no match for Vader, but they're just something else for Vader to deal with. So it could be twofold. It could be, okay, keep Vader on his heels and always pay attention to who's behind him trying to climb up the ladder. And so he doesn't look forward to dethrone the Emperor. And at the same time, he's just getting a better apprentice. He's honing his skills. He's getting a more highly tuned fighting machine, and that's basically what he wants. He doesn't want somebody. The Emperor doesn't have Vader by his side going, you know, son, one day you're gonna take over the company. It's not like that.
Trial by fire.
Yeah, it's completely not that thing. It's actually really those points you made are just fascinating. Yeah, it's absolutely, to me, it speaks. To the Emperor's character, to Palpatine's character, it speaks about the fact that I'm reading into this, so I might be completely wrong, and people feel free to disagree. It seems to me like Palpatine used the Sith to get himself into a powerful position, and now he wants to dispatch the Sith paradigm completely because he knows it's a threat to him. He's been on the other side of that power play when he dispatched Plagueis. So you can expect that Vader would kill him. So he thinks, oh, I'm going to shut this Sith stuff down now completely. That's why the Inquisitors brought in, the Grand Inquisitors brought in. That's why he entertains the suggestion of adding Luke to their little duo and becoming a trio. It's because I think he wants to distance himself as much as possible from the Sith paradigm. If that means Vader gets lost there, then he's fine with it. Because once Vader's out of the game, Palpatine's untouchable. The only person that really represents a threat to Palpatine is Vader. I think Palpatine wants to get rid of the Sith paradigm, which is why he doesn't refer to himself as Darth Sidious. He's the Emperor. And in doing so, he gets rid of his biggest threat, which is Vader. I think that's Palpatine's secret agenda, in my estimation at least, looking at this book.
Yeah, definitely. They both see each other as a means to an end.
Yes.
And that's the dynamic I get out of this, is that they will tolerate each other as long as they both need it.
Mm-hmm.
And Vader seems to be, at least from issue 10, 11, going in a direction, and the Emperor is clearly going in another direction. And they seem to want to use each other to get to a point and then dispatch of one another.
Yeah, absolutely. The other interesting, and you guys have alluded to it as well, the interesting character dynamic on the page as well is that of Anakin and Vader, those two identities that are at odds with each other. We saw it beautifully illustrated in issue 5. And I wonder, I'm pouring all my hopes into this. And again, something tells me, I've learned, having read these comics, that I'm probably going to be wrong. But this lightsaber hilt that we know is coming represents a blend of those two things. This is the Skywalker lightsaber design. This is Anakin building something he knows and blending it with the crystal that he's made, right, through bleeding Kirikin Valar's crystal. So this is Vader and Anakin sort of becoming, this to me represents Vader and Anakin becoming one whole rather than two fractured elements of one person's psyche. And it seems that this is like the talisman that represents that. It's the Skywalker lightsaber. Mm-hmm. but it's everything, all that pain in that crystal wrapped into one handy package. So what do you guys think? Is there anything to that?
Well, I think definitely. I think it's selfishly, I want to it to be the start of these two becoming one, because the way that this is written, that's one of the dynamics that I really enjoy about this, is the constant internal battle between Anakin and Vader. I think that's one of the most well done parts about this book, and it's something that we haven't had the light shined on very much, or if at all, within the new canon. You go to Lords of the Sith, you get very similar elements, but not in the amount of detail that we're getting with a monthly comic book issue. So I agree with you that this is definitely the direction that he's going. This is the start to melding Anakin and Vader into one single entity. But I'm hoping it's just the start and we get to see a lot more of that internal struggle as we progress through this hopefully ongoing or lengthy ongoing series.
Yeah, agreed.
Yep, absolutely. I just, it's one of those, I think Vader is, especially in this, obviously, this is the Darth Vader series, and what a, you can't just have him slashing and choking, force choking people. Like, what a fantastic thing to have this Anakin inside him weaving through every page and everything he does. So this is, it's, I think it's great. I think it's giving us so much more for the character.
Yeah. Yeah. The Anakin wasn't extinguished in that instant on Mustafar. He wasn't extinguished. He's still in there. He's still, we know he returns in the film that was named for him, Return of the Jedi. It's, he's there, and it needs to inform this character of Vader, or Vader just becomes a two-dimensional thing. And what's the reason to read? Why would you read this comic if that's all you're going to get? You know, yeah, we've exactly. seen it on screen. Now we can get a more nuanced look at this guy. I think it's fascinating. So let's should we rate these books? What do you think?
Sure,
definitely.
What's your, Rob, give us your take on issue 10, and well, let's do them both at the same time. What's your ratings there for those?
10. Okay. The Jocasta New Arc issues from 6 to 10, I'd say would be a 9. The last issue, I can confidently put at as issue 10 would be an 8 for me. This new one, it's about 7.5. It's good. It's, I think maybe I'm just falling victim to comparing it to what come before. And this 7.5 isn't a bad rating. It's just, I'm comparing it to this whole run as a whole. If I just picked this up the shelf, I'd be like, oh, wow, this is fantastic. And it is. Mm-hmm. But compared to what we were getting before it. But I have high hopes that this new arc, whether it be the next 4 issues, will be right up there along with the other two.
Cool. Tim?
Yeah, definitely. I'm right there with you, Robin. I run the risk of painting myself into a numbers corner here by ranking these things, because I don't quite remember what I gave before, but I can confidently say that the final issue in the Jocasta New Arc is the best in that arc. Not to say that the previous issues are anything short of great, but that one definitely caps it off with a meaningful ending, and it brings a close to that story. So I'm going to give that, you know, 8.59. And the kickoff to this new arc, issue number 11, I really enjoyed this too. And I'm really enjoying the continuity and continuum of storytelling within kind of these multiple piece-by-piece narrative that they're getting that are forming a much larger arc. So I'm going to have to give this one probably an 8. So it's I'd say, as I said at the start, it's a better jumping on point than I would say issue 6. Again, I'm comparing that to issue 5, but comparing issue to number 11 to 10, there is a much better, you're not coming off a high down to something that's great. You're coming from something that's really great to something that's great. So both big time recommend for me.
Yeah, I agree. Huge recommends. Still one of the strongest, probably the strongest, I'm not going to pull any punches, is the strongest series they've got out there now. Even including Aphra in that run. Vader's such a compelling character. What Charles Soule is doing to deepen that character by flavouring a little bit more with Anakin, the legacy of Anakin, is fantastic. This page, this little snippet, this panel that we took out and read through, that's why this book to me, issue 10, was an 8. It's so powerful. It gave me chills. And then I think coming out of issue 11, I'm giving that an 8 as well. Because, and not because it's on its own, maybe it's not as fulfilling as it will be or as it will seem when it's part of a trade. But it did so much for me in terms of reframing that relationship between Palpatine, continuing the work done in issue 10, reframing that relationship between Palpatine and Vader in such an impactful way, and beautiful art as well, and well-paced action, well-paced storytelling. There's just so much to love about these two books. So I'll give them both an 8 out of 10 in there, with issue 5, that we've referenced an awful lot this evening, still being that benchmark for this series of books, which itself is a benchmark for Star Wars comic books, in my humble opinion. So yeah, highly recommend 8 across the boards for these two issues.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Brilliant stuff.
Right, we've got a couple of bits of listener comms off the last episode, the Storms of Crait episode. This comes from the YouTube posting of the episode, which won't happen anymore. I'm moving away from YouTube after they've been treating their content creators. But these are, we got a message from Miss Herman Merman on YouTube saying, agreed, renaming the salt planet Crait to Dantooine would have been a nice touch. We discussed that when we did the review of the Crait Escape or whatever it was. I think that's a t-shirt. And Vesuvi, one of our most active listeners is Aunt Vesuvi, the wonderful Vesuvi. She says, many thanks to Mark, Rob and Tim, and special thanks to Mark for referencing my comments about the shuttle Tidarium. I love your notion that Harrison Dula ended up stealing it. Still hoping that we'll see that. And since you asked, she says, no, I haven't read nor seen a hard copy of Storms of Crait yet. I've just been watching summary videos on YouTube, so I am familiar with the story and have been able to appreciate the artwork. But your points of praise and criticism in the above video all strike me as valid. I wish the creative minds behind the movies, TV shows and novels and comics would employ the range of impressions from the Star Wars Commonwealth. High praise, Vesuvi, thank you. I sincerely believe it would elevate the depth and consumer satisfaction quotient of their output. So if they just listen to us, their content would get a little bit better. That's high praise.
Well,
that is high praise.
I'm sure we can be hired.
I'm available.
I got a number in my head.
My decision to go and work there would be the fastest thing you've seen since the Falcon. Yeah, that would not be a problem.
That's great.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thanks
so much.
Thanks a lot, Vesuvi. Appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome.
Yes,
comments.
Absolutely.
I know thank Vesuvi you. Will be consuming this episode because she started streaming the episodes from StarWarsCommonwealth.com. So, and awesome. she discovered Tumbling Saber through doing that. So that's already working. So thanks ever so much for the comments. Gentlemen, I think we're about ready to wrap up. We went on very, very long this week, this month. But great, great conversation as always. I appreciate your time. Is there anything you want to throw in before we wrap up this month's episode, gents?
I just want to thank both you guys for putting all the work you did into the Star Wars Commonwealth website as a whole. I know you guys have been working on this for a little bit, and you can really, really tell. It's so, and just like you said, we have other listeners of other shows finding other shows. And yes. And the Star Wars Commonwealth has such a wide variety and wide range and a lot of niche shows. Anything you want out of Star Wars, you'll find it on this website. Like you won't have to go any further. So, but again, thanks, guys. And it's really awesome.
Oh, not at all. It was a pleasure. Tim did a lot of the heavy lifting on this one. It's
team effort.
It was an absolute pleasure to be a part of. And I think it was really, even if it's introduced Vesuvi to the Tumbling Saber guys, it's worked. It's proven that it can work and get the Star Wars Commonwealth message out there. So, yeah, an absolute pleasure. Tim?
Definitely. And if she wants to click Podcast Network and go down just a few to the Nerd Room and check us out, by all means.
Yeah.
We're there.
Absolutely, yeah. They even talk about DC once in a while, so, you know.
Yeah, we let that
everything you want.
Yeah, tune in for those fights. Yeah, and of course you'll find all of Rob's roundtables and the retrospective that will be dropping next month, the first issue of the retrospective that will be dropping next month. You'll find all of those right there on the Talk Star Wars feed. So, yeah, I think we're done. Gentlemen, where can people, StarWarsCommonwealth.com, obviously, but independent of that, where can people find your internet stuff?
Yeah, for sure. You can always find all of our podcasts. That's The Nerd Room at thenerdroom.net. I do all of my writing now over on starwarscommonwealth.com. And you can find me on Twitter at thenerdrm.
You can find myself at RobertMMCast on Twitter. And of course, I'm in the VIP group on Facebook for Star Wars VIPs. And also, don't forget, if you're interested in being a part of this and you actually want to dip your toe in the big ocean of podcasting, I host the TSW Roundtable, where I take listeners of the network, of the Star Wars Commonwealth, and I get them on the show with various hosts from around the Star Wars Commonwealth Network. And we have a great time discussing anything, and that's what the whole show is. It's what the listeners want. They come on, they get to try podcasting, and they get to talk whatever they want to talk about it. Well, within PG ratings, so.
Yeah.
So other than that, yeah, you can find, I got a weekly show, the Roman Podcast. That's not Star, that's all non-Star Wars stuff, but we're good for a laugh. And yeah, that's about it. That's all I got going on.
Awesome. Yeah, make sure you go check out Rob's other podcast, that Roman Podcast. They just celebrated 100 episodes.
Congratulations, so
congratulations on that.
Thank you. I'm in the Century Club. And yeah, and I mentioned this before. There's a lot of podcasters. When we start, I know 90% of the podcasters number their episodes 001, 002. And they're hoping that one day they're going to have to use that first zero and they're going to replace it with one and then a two. So, yeah, it's a milestone, and it's great to be part of the Century Club.
Yeah, congratulations, mate.
All gotten there this year.
Yeah. We have, yeah. We've all passed it. Well, I just barely dragged myself across the line. But, yeah, we all got there piece by piece. We're all making it. Yeah, you'll find everything I do at StarWarsCommonwealth.com as well as TalkStarWars.co.uk. And I'm on Twitter at TalkStarWars. I must say, please go to the Star Wars Commonwealth and check out the other shows that are there. We've just added a show recently, Tatooine Sons, which is just such a wonderful, original, charming podcast. There's nothing else out there quite like it. I really love those guys. I love what they're doing. So proud to have them on board. And yeah, what everybody that's doing work over there is high standard. Each of those shows is worth your time. So go check them out over there. That's it. We're done, I think. Next month, gents, more Vader. Perhaps a catch up with Aphra and see what else comes our way.
Maybe jump into the Thrawn a little bit there, Mark. Maybe just do the first issue a read.
All right, I will do that. I will take that away from this episode. My homework. I will go away. I will do that, and then at least we can speak about that in some way. Spoilery next month.
And yeah, and I'll make sure I'll get a quick recap on what's going on with Poe Dameron on his end. So.
Oh yeah,
we'll have you all covered. Anything you're reading in Star Wars, we'll cover you.
Yes, of course, and feel free to email us as well. You can message each of us independently if you want to, but if you email into talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com, put Talk Star Wars Comics or TSW Comics in the subject header, each of us will get a copy of that email. So yeah, whatever you want to say, whatever point you want to make, or opinion you want heard, fire that over to us, and we'll tackle that next month. All right. Thanks very much for joining us again this month, everybody. Have a good one, and we'll see you in 30 days.
Bye.
Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Find us at StarWarsCommonwealth.com alongside
The Tumbling Saber Podcast,
The Generation X-Wing Podcast,
Rogue Squadron Podcast,
The Skyhoppers Podcast,
The TSW Roundtable,
The Nerdroom Podcast,
and San Diego Sabres Radio Podcast.
Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger world.
Oh, I'm so beaten. I was so anxious that we wasn't going to make it through the recording with the Skype issue.